Welcome to For the Love of Mesa. I'm Brian Nissen. Today, a conversation with actor Joe Mantegna. His credits include Godfather 3, Searching for Bobby Fischer, and Fat Tony from The Simpsons. And speaking of Tony, he won one for his performance in David Mamet's Glengarry Glen Ross in 1984. Lately, he's famous for his portrayal of David Rossi in the award-winning TV series Criminal Minds.
Now, your face is going to be on one of those tapes.
And when I find it, I'm going to paper this city with it.
Just like you did with those women. Everyone will see it.
They won't be able to ignore you now.
But you won't inspire fear. You'll inspire hatred and ridicule. Because the only power someone like you has is a mask. And once that mask is removed, you'll be as insignificant as you've always been. A loser!
Joe and Mesa have two important connections. He's a Chicago native and a lifelong Cubs fan. And of course, thousands of folks like Joe come to Sloan Park in Mesa every year to watch the Cubs in spring training. But Mesa is also the first autism-certified city in America. And Joe and his wife, Arlene, are autism advocates. Their daughter, Mia, born in 1987, was diagnosed with autism when she was 2 years old. Also in this conversation is the president and CEO of Visit Mesa, Mark Garcia. Mark's also the parent of an autistic child. An experience he had while on a family vacation is what drove him to turn Mesa into a destination for travelers with autistic children. We're also joined by David Breen, the president and CEO of Special Olympics Illinois, which he says is more than a once-a-year track meet. It's a movement for inclusion and acceptance. It's a great conversation with three men who are making a big difference in the world of autism awareness. Enjoy. Well,
yes.
We'll just jump right into
Absolutely.
It. Absolutely. We're aligned here with you on this issue because we're really proud of the fact that we're the first autism-certified city in America. And I'm just wondering what that means to you.
Well, first of all, how ironic that the Cubs are in Mesa.
Yeah.
being a Cub fan all of my life, and I have pictures of me like at 5 years old, you know, sitting in front of a black and white television with the glove and looking and, you know, seeing, you know, Ernie Banks up to bat on the, you know, and he was a rookie, I think, at the time.
Right.
And so it's one of those serendipitous things in a way. It's like, here I am now in Mesa. It could have been any team in the major leagues. And it turns out, well, okay, somebody up there likes me. Somebody's making this all kind of fit into place. So this, it's all just, you know, it's obviously serendipitous, but obviously a place like this and what's happening here would have my support regardless of that. But that puts a little kind of icing on the cake, doesn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
So so for me, it's just, it goes back to, in a way, like when people will say, well, so what's it like to have a child with autism? And my answer is always, I don't know what it's like not to have a child with autism.
Sure.
So it's like there's no, that's it. That's our lives. That's my family's life.
Yeah.
Catchphrases that are kind of go through my mind often, and one of them is that, you know, you play the cards you're dealt in your life, and the other is that everybody's got a story and nobody gets a free ride.
Yeah.
You know, I have a story, you have a story, everybody in this room has a story, everybody on this planet has a story.
Right.
Whatever that story is, you do it, and you do it to the best you can do it. And I feel blessed that I'm able to do whatever things I can do. And if it's of help to any others in a similar situation, so be it.
Yeah. Well, you really dug in, though. I mean, you've put a lot of work into the world of autism.
Well, I'm in a public profession. This is, you know what I mean? Yet, and so I do understand, and I'm old enough to understand that, whether I like it or not, I have there is a public persona that I carry that many of us in my profession have.
Mm-hmm.
And if it allows me to bring some attention or focus to organizations or causes or things that can help people that need that help, why wouldn't I do that?
In the late 80s, I remember it was the first time that the word autism landed in my mind. I was visiting a friend, and he said his neighbor had an autistic child. And I said, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to explain, but it was pretty clear he didn't know what that meant either.
Late 80s, you say?
Late 80s.
Yeah, well, that's when my daughter was born in 87.
Right. So how did that diagnosis hit you? Where were you in your understanding of it?
Well, you know, I was actually living at the time in New York. I was actually getting ready to work on Godfather, two movies at the same time. I was working on Godfather 3 and a Woody Allen picture called Alice. Mm. So we were going to be in New York for a good amount of time. My wife was pregnant with our second child. My oldest daughter, Mia, was about 2.5 at the time.
Yeah.
But we knew right away that there were some things about Mia that she just wasn't talking. When she'd be around other kids her age, we realized, she doesn't seem to be as attentive as they are or talking. She likes to be by herself and kind of play by herself. And we just kept thinking, well, it's just, you know, everybody's on their own schedule, that kind of a thing. But while we were in New York, that really became apparent to us that we thought, maybe we should look into this. Maybe there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody had turned us on to a doctor in New York. And we met with him and he did his whole evaluation and he called us into a room. And I remember sitting down and he looks at us and he says, well, I've been doing this a long time and I could tell you that they're out of the 10 kind of indications of someone who would have autism, I would say your daughter has around 7 to 8 of those. So that's the first time we really heard that word kind of resonated. And so what happens at that moment, you know, your heart goes up from out of your chest into your throat and then back down again. And then just like what you mentioned, your thing, I look at my wife, I think autism, this is a word we've heard about and kind of, but that's, you know, now what? And it's almost within that split second, the next thing that happens is, now you almost have to subconsciously, you're making a choice in your head. And the first choice is, oh my God, this is a tragedy. This is terrible. How are we going to deal with this? And then the next instance going through your head is, well, wait a minute. This is our daughter. We're not going anywhere. What can we do to deal with this? Mm. Now what do we do? You know, how do we go forward?
Yeah.
And so once you've made that kind of adjustment, it's almost like, it's almost like throwing a car instantly in the reverse and like, oh, no, we're not going this way. Now we're going this way.
Yeah, right.
And so from that moment on, we got, that was it. Now that becomes our world at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the doctor starts explaining and you start looking into it and you realize that at that time it was something like it was one out of every 15, you know, it was a huge number, especially with girls. It was not very, it was more likely in boys. So more like you really felt like, wow, the odds were so, you know, this is kind of weird, but it happened and okay. But she had been born very premature. She was born only at 1 pound, 13 ounces.
It's astonishing.
So she was one of the youngest, smallest babies born in California that year. So she was lucky to even be alive.
Wow.
So she dodged so many other bullets during that time.
Yeah.
We would go to the intensive care unit when she was born and I'd see babies who were bigger than her, who had been born later, healthier, but yet had much more severe problems. Some even passed away during the time she was there.
Mm.
And she was tough. My daughter, you know, and she's all hooked up, you know, all kinds of things and just to keep her alive.
Sure.
So we figured, looked at it that way, that after, you know, now that she was close to 3 years old, if autism is the one bullet she did not dodge, then so be it, you know. So from that point on, what we felt is, okay, now what can we do? And one thing that was kind of important, when the movie Godfather 3 opened, it was a pretty big deal because it was the new Godfather movie after 18 years of not seeing one. I think it was Time Magazine or People Magazine, you know, the press people had them call me. And the person I was talking to, I think it was a phone interview, said, it's become to our attention that you have a child with autism. Would you mind talking about it? And at that point, as far as I knew, nobody knew that we had a child with autism.
Yeah.
And it kind of caught me. And again, in that instant, I realized I have to make a decision now. And then I thought to myself, if I said, no, I don't want to talk about it. I thought, in the back of my head, I thought, I'm negating her existence. So I took that breath and I thought, yeah, okay, what do you want to know? And we started talking, and I explained the whole, just what I just said, this little my journey. The article came out in that magazine, and then a few weeks later, I got a piece of mail sent through my agency or something. Somebody sent me, and it was a letter from a woman who said, I read what you said about that. And she said how much it affected her, because she thought, we thought this only happens to people like us. And the fact that you were open about this and explain, because I told how sometimes, it's weird to go into a grocery store and your daughter has a little bit of a problem and start screaming and yelling, and people look at you like you're a bad parent,
yeah.
and you want to grab them and shake them and say, no, my daughter has autism, but you can't, you don't. And so this woman was, it was a beautiful letter she wrote. I mean, it brought me to tears reading it. Mm. And that's when I thought to myself, okay, there's certainly no going back now. That's my daughter, and there's a lot of other daughters and sons like this out there. Now, what can we do to kind of make everybody's life any better?
Yeah, silence doesn't do any good. It just seems like every group that needs some help and love and attention, it begins with conversation.
Of course.
And that was a key decision that you made at that moment.
Well, like I said, yeah, that was it. And that was, you know, 30 plus years ago. And when I
hear you talking about that, I think about Mark, because I know his experience is a little bit similar. Can you talk about that, kind of what you were experiencing when you would take your son?
Sure.
And how it led to our current situation here?
Obviously, I can relate as an autism dad to your experience, especially when you first find out that your child has been diagnosed with autism, and it certainly rocks your world. It shocks you. I didn't recognize it as readily as my wife did. I saw that the behavior was different from our two older typical children. And then he would spin in circles and rub his face up against the walls in the house. And so we recognized that something was a little bit different. So that's why we went and got the diagnosis from Dr. Melmed here locally. And he was diagnosed ultimately with level 2 severe autism. And obviously, immediately, you wonder, what kind of a life is this child going to lead? And what do we as parents do to support him in having the most productive life possible? You begin to do a lot of research. What kind of resources are available? Where do I get those resources? What does it look like? And so fast forward to summer of 2018. We go to a Southern California beach destination every year for our vacation. And he had meltdown after meltdown. And what was interesting and different about this experience was that, you know, we were used to the stares and the whispers from other people, you know, like us, you know, patroning a place, but never from the supposed hospitality community. So, in the museums, at the restaurant, at the hotels, we were getting some of this and made to feel uncomfortable, unwelcome. And I just felt at the time that this is wrong. You know, these folks in this business ought to know better. But then I realized, well, maybe there's just not enough awareness, recognition of what autism is. So that's what we set out to do. I related the experience to my senior staff and said, we're going to do something about this. I don't know what it looks like yet, but we're going to do something. And I'd hoped that it was meaningful, that it was substantive, that it had teeth, because I'm in the autism community. I certainly didn't want to do something where we just put a video together, slap a sticker on our window, say we're autism friendly. That's not what I wanted. I was hoping for a top to bottom educational platform that really introduced what autism is to the greater community. And so I stumbled upon this organization in Jacksonville, Florida, called the International Board of Credentialing and Continuing Education Standards. And they've been doing certification around autism, around cognitive and sensitive disorders for 20 years, primarily in the education space, some in healthcare. And then I noticed that they had been doing some hotels scattered throughout the country, the Space Center in Houston, the Nickelodeon Center, and the Mall of America in Minneapolis. And I said, well, this might be an organization. So visited with them. They had never been approached by a city or a destination to do any type of community-wide certification. And so we worked with them together and determined that if we could get 58 of our partnering businesses here in Mesa and 80% of their front-facing and guest-facing staff to go through this primarily online training with quizzes and testing at the end, making it a real credential, that we could become, at that time, an autism-certified travel destination. And so it was amazing how once we made the determination, yes, we're going to do this, we lined up three of our largest hotels. We lined up our Chamber of Commerce. We lined up the Parks and Recreation Department within the city. And we had this launch to the community. Our mayor was very supportive. Our city manager was very supportive. And that was April of 2019. And by the fall of 2019, we had become an autism certified city through and through. It was amazing because non-tourism agencies came to join us in this effort. Boeing, their interest wasn't on the hospitality standpoint, but in employment. Same with SRP, one of our largest public utilities here. We had auto shops and floral shops and so many others that decided they wanted to be part of this movement and this journey. So it's been a thrill to be a part of. 5,500 people now have gone through the training, so it's pretty impressive.
How this looks on the ground is that when a family arrives at a museum, a hotel here in Mesa, they're met with people who understand autism, at least at some level, and
Absolutely.
They're ready to accommodate them. And
that's right. And they'll provide sensory kits. Most of our hotels have sensory kits. Several of also have quiet rooms. We have sensory guides at almost all of our museums and parks so that you can plan. And very often, the autism families want to know before they go. And so we've done 70 now, 360-degree virtual tours so they can see before they go. We have the sensory guides. We have an autism travel guide. We have geocaching tour. There's so many things that providing support. And now we're doing so much more in the accessibility and inclusion space. It's
fantastic.
We're moving forward.
That is fantastic.
I would love just to hear your reaction. Did you know all of that?
No.
And what's your reaction to it?
I'm just knocked out by it. I mean, it's just that's really, really incredible. Well, like I said, you know, that would have made me a Cubs fan if I'd have been a White Sox fan. You know, just hearing that, I'd say, okay, well, I'm in the Mesa. That's it. I guess I got to embrace this team there with that. You know, and there's one other aspect of it, and that was the educational aspect of it of going through school.
Yes.
And for, in our case, because of my line of work, because so much travel was involved, we had to make that decision. Okay, does Daddy go off and have to go do these movies and And so the decision we made is like, no. They're going to have to, you know, Mia's going to have to learn the capital of Indiana some other time. But like if Daddy's going to have to go to Russia for 2 weeks for a movie,
sure.
We're all going.
Yeah.
Or if we have to go to Canada or if we have to go to Europe, we're all going. We'll deal with it. And it turned out to be one of the smartest decisions we could make because what had happened is we learned about the educational kind of systems in other places. And I remember this one place in Canada, they said, well, we don't have a special education class. She said, well, what does your daughter need? Because we put her in a class with all the regular kids. And if she needs something special, we'll provide that. But we don't put a special class where just all the kids have a certain kind of an issue.
Sure.
And it was like, oh, okay, well, all right. And we tried that. And it turned out, so in other words, that was the beginning of inclusion, of understanding that. And so when we got back to the States and we got back to Los Angeles where we live, this was right around, my daughter was around fourth, fifth grade by this point. We would go to the school and say, is there any teachers here who would understand that, wouldn't mind having our daughter in their class, their regular class, knowing, and we'll provide the aid for her that she may need, but we want her to be around just the regular kids and all that. And we'll talk to the kids and let them know, because we saw a teacher do that for us when we put her into a school in Chicago where the teacher got up in front of all these little kids, and they were, I think it was like the second grade, and said, this is Mia. She has autism. She may walk around the room and sing and dance, or she may scream or something. That's because she has this thing. But we're all going to help her, and we're all going to be real kind to her. And it was like, we were like, my wife and I started bawling. We're like, oh, my God. And the kids were all like, okay. And that's when we realized, oh, my. And so from that point on, we hardly ever settled for less than that. And we would do that. And so what would happen is these teachers, you'd find that teacher in that school would say, yeah, we'll give that a whirl. I've never done that before, but we'll try it. And then at the end of that semester, that term, that year, the teacher would say, I can't tell you how much we've all benefited from it. Because the other kids as much, you know, your daughter hopefully benefited from being in that environment because they would all, it was like having a new puppy in the class for them. And,
sure.
And being, understanding that they have to be, treat her a little special and help her. But they said all those kids now left knowing not everybody's exactly the same, and there is going to be sometimes people they're going to meet in their lives that need, you know, a little more attention, a little more support, and all that. And so once we, you know, took that path, we never turned back from that. And because of that, my daughter was able to finish, go through grammar school, high school, took courses in college. You know, still her idea of a good time at 34 years old is go to Disneyland and meet the princesses. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And her speech is such that she has speech, but you would think English is her second language, and you don't know what that first language is because she's, your pronouns are all over the place and this, that, and the other. But it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like The point is she most of the friends she's made in her life are people that aren't on the spectrum that will just call her and say, Mia, how you doing? And, and it's like, so that was an important aspect of it too. And I think you may find that in your journey, certainly what you've done is just amazing. I mean, you know, God bless you for your attention on that and doing that.
I have to ask you this question because when you tell that story about your daughter and that teacher who handled that situation so well, it reminds me, I hope you don't mind talking about your career for just a second, because the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer has this wonderful scene where you have this gifted child who is different, and Laura Linney plays the teacher there, and you kind of are a little fearful that she's not on your page this kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always thought that scene was so emotionally so spot on, and I just love your performance in that. And I just wondered if your daughter would have been 2 or 3 at this time, if you weren't imagining some future conversation that you were going to have to have with the teacher.
Without question. No, yeah. I remember distinctly actually even doing that scene.
Yeah.
And thinking, you know, and Steve Zalian, who wrote the script, I mean, the next thing he wrote was Schindler's List. The guy was a brilliant writer. So, I mean, as I read those lines and knew I would have to do this scene with Laura, I realized I was tapping into something that was not that difficult to tap into.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes as an actor, you have to do a lot of research and think, okay, now how do I want to play this? As I read those lines, I realized, okay, I don't really have to dig too deep to pull this out.
You could tell.
You know, and I just let it go, and I just let it come from me.
The conversation turned to David Breen, president and CEO of Special Olympics Illinois.
I've been involved for 37 years with Special Olympics, but I marvel at the parents because they're dealing with things 24/7. I think what I've seen, and Joe's mentioning it, and certainly Mark and I have had these conversations, I think one of our hashtags is choose to include.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think we've tried to do over the years is one of the best programs we're running right now is our Unified Champion Schools program. And that literally is bringing individuals with and without disabilities together to change the school environment. And what we found is the role modeling, that it happens both ways. Like the individuals that supposedly don't have special needs really learn a lot more out of these programs. So what we've seen is just is really the parents coming together in those environments and the camaraderie. And it's like every other parent. You're like, you wouldn't believe what my kid did. And they're like, yeah, I would. And I believe that my kid did that last week. I think Unified Champion Schools has really changed the landscape because we're teaching kids in elementary school that it's okay, much like Joe's story about the teacher that sat down with the kids, that's what they're doing across the country and across the world now. Yeah, and you know, I think the biggest thing that I think's happened out of that is now individuals with autism, individuals with Down syndrome, whatever disability that you may be labeled with, they're starting to work and they're starting to really flourish in different job environments. You know, and I talked a little bit with Mark about this. You know, United Airlines hired 4 of our athletes at O'Hare. And I said, it's going to change your whole employee camaraderie. It's going to change your whole environment. And they have. They're customer service reps. They treat, and you guys know, you all travel a lot. They treat everybody with kindness, even when they're being yelled at. And that's why I always say, you know, the people that we deal with and I have dealt with over the years, they're the most evolved people in the world. They really are, because they don't sit there and see you when you come down the hall and they're like, oh, you're a certain race, you're a certain socioeconomic status. I mean, truly, they look at the person. And that's what I have really, that's what keeps me so motivated over the years is being involved. And, you know, I think the other thing that's really pertinent here is that we're the number one health program for people with intellectual disabilities in the world. There's 6 million athletes worldwide in 190 countries. But the reason that's important is we're starting to teach doctors, nurses, different disciplines, podiatrists even. They do programming for our athletes. But they're starting to understand about individuals with autism or individuals with other disabilities. And it's making them more comfortable. So I think that's the impact that at least Special Olympics has had, you know, over the years. And then I think the other thing is just if you've seen just a real quick story, we had Champions, the movie, which Woody Harrelson's in. The whole cast is individuals with disabilities. But we had a premiere in Rosemont in Illinois. And so at the end of the movie, the lights are flashing and everything's going off. And I thought, this is a fantastic ending. Well, it's not. We had to evacuate the theater because the grill got hot and it smoked the theater. But the one guy, Nick has autism. Nick worked in a movie theater and he's like, I got this. I know how to evacuate a movie theater. But Nick's whole point was trying to help everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's our individuals in a nutshell a lot of times.
That's interesting.
And we just do it through sport. But I think there's so many other facets besides sport. And we talk a lot about, you know, focus on the ability. You know, I know just reading things and talking to Joe very briefly, you know, his daughter is really into makeup and, you know, she's an artist, I'm sure. But get to know their story. That's what really resonated earlier today. You know, Joe talked about that is I ask our team to get to know everybody's story because on the surface you may think one thing. But as the old saying goes, don't judge a book by its cover because there's just so much more in depth with these individuals.
It's astonishing to me that when you approach that group, they said, oh, they kind of almost didn't know what to do. We haven't had a whole city approach us and want to be certified. Mm-hmm. But now it just seems like, why aren't more people? Are there also financial advantages?
Well, yes. I mean, this was good corporate responsibility. Yes, it was the right thing to do, but I wouldn't have done this if it wasn't a good business decision.
No, yeah.
Obviously, it's a super, uber loyal consumer base. When people find out about a place that is autism friendly,
yeah,
the families will flock to it and they'll go again and again and again. And Joe brought it up earlier, the prevalence rate was 1 in 1,500 or, you know, whatever, when your daughter was diagnosed. I think it was 1 in 68, 1 in 69 when my son was diagnosed. It's now, per the CDC, 1 in 44. Wow. And the CDC will release their prevalence rate, I think, next year. It's almost guaranteed to be even higher. So, yeah, I mean, it was a business decision. And it's started to reap rewards, not only from a PR standpoint. I mean, there's now a lot of people who have learned about who Mesa even is. I mean, we are the 36th largest city in the country, but we don't have the assets that are normally associated with a city of our size, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the reasons why we did this. This was good for brand elevation, getting more people to know who we are. And we, you know, we've been on all over the world, BBC. We've done radio in Australia, the cover of every major publication in this country, countless podcasts like this and radio interviews. So a lot of folks have become to know who Mesa is and what we're about through this autism certification journey. But we've also booked conferences out of it. I mean, that's the purpose of our organization is to drive incremental tax growth through the city through hotel stays. That's our primary purpose. And so it's worked out for us. We've booked three conventions. One was specifically related to autism and then other sort of cousin type of groups. And it's more than recouped our initial investment in this. And it wasn't cheap. I mean, it was a fairly expensive haul for us, a pull to do something like this, but yeah, we've been paid back and then some.
It's wonderful. Yeah. And the landscape will look totally different in 10 to 20 years, you know, across from cities across
especially
the country.
Especially here in Mesa, because we continue to grow at a very rapid rate, as you know.
Yeah. Joe, I'm interested to know, you know, autism is probably still, you know, despite the growing prevalence, is just not on people's radar for whatever reason. You know, it doesn't affect you till it affects you. If you could talk to everyone, what would you really want to drive home to the public if you had a chance to talk to everyone? And the listenership of this podcast is so high that you are, in fact, talking to everyone on earth.
There you go. Good to know. Boy, that's a good question. You know, you might start with a visit to Mesa, it sounds like to me. I mean,
amen.
You know, because you got it right. I mean, the thing is, you know, is that one thing we learned early on is that, and it kind of drove us in our raising of our daughter and continues to this day, is that we realized the world's not going to adjust to her. You know, she's going to have to adjust to the world. But what we can hopefully do is help the world understand they are entitled as much to a spot, a place at the table as anybody else. So all we're asking is to understand that, be accommodating, and if they need a little bit of help to get to the table and to sit at the table and to be there, then you do that, and why wouldn't you? And that's all you can do. Be aware. And Mesa, God bless you, man. Thank you for you know, everyone who has helped bring this awareness. Now all you got to do is spread the word, and let's get this kind of thing everywhere.
To learn more about Visit Mesa and how the city is ready to welcome autistic children, adults, and people of all abilities, go to visitmesa.com and click on Travel Accessibility and Inclusion. For Visit Mesa and for the love of Mesa, I'm Brian Nissen.